Penguin Random House Canada presents The Good Allies, How Canada and the United States Fought Together to Defeat Fascism During the Second World War by Tim Cook. Read for you by David Ferry. For Sharon, Sarah, Chloe, Emma, Paige, and Bear, with love. Introduction. The secret aim of every American leader, including Franklin Roosevelt, is to dominate Canada and ultimately to possess the country. So believed a concerned Canadian Prime Minister, William Lyon Mackenzie King, who confessed this worry to his diary. The claim, riven with King's fear for Canada's very survival, had a basis in truth, given U.S. invasions northward in 1775 and 1812, coupled with lesser acts of aggression in the 1830s and 1840s. Every prime minister had been aware of the precarious place of the Dominion within North America. While King admired the President of the United States, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, his comment nonetheless revealed an anxiety that ran through him and many of his generation about the growing power south of the border. The Canadian-American relationship was shaped from its earliest days by the two nations' common origins in the British Empire in North America, as well as by their alliances with and battles against Indigenous groups. British victory over France in 1763 led to the ascendance of the British colonies in North America, albeit with a strong French-Canadian presence in what had been New France. However, that victory was soon followed by a traumatic shattering of unity during the American Revolution, which began in 1775. Through revolution and battle, the Americans carved out a new democratic republic, finally defeating the British forces stationed on present-day American soil and driving loyalists into the Canadian colonies that had remained with the Crown. With the emergence of the U.S. as a new power, one anxious to remove Europeans from North America, the Canadians in British North America spent much of their early history worried that the headlong expansionism of the new republic would lead to them being conquered in the name of liberty and in an attempt at freeing Canadians from supposed imperial oppression. There would always be a significant population and wealth imbalance between Canada, as the Confederated colonies were known from 1867 onward, and the United States. But after years of unease, conflict, and efforts at political integration, the American crusading mentality diminished in the early 20th century. Out of two centuries of strife emerged at first uneasy friendship, then minor treaties, and ultimately fruitful partnerships that would enable the two nations to navigate living together on the continent. Since the 1930s, few other countries in the world, especially those sharing a 9,000-kilometer border, have been so accommodating and generous to each other in matters of trade, politics, and defense. The United States is a superpower with a population 9 times greater than Canada's, with the strongest military in the world, and with the most pervasive global influence of any nation, making it even more remarkable that the smaller and less populous country to its north has not only survived, but thrived. A shared language and initially religions, a grounding in rule of law and a similar culture, a reciprocal flow of immigrants and an intermingling of people through marriages, robust trade relations and cross-border investment, and a largely undefended border and a collective vision of security have all helped to forge bonds of familiarity. The evolution of Canadians and Americans from enemies to wary neighbors to allies has a long arc. But a key turning point in that history can be traced to the Second World War from 1939 to 1945. During that period of global crisis, the two countries put aside differences to defeat the fascists and militarists in Germany, Italy, and Japan. It was a time to battle together against the existential threat of a ruthless enemy. This book argues that Canada became a stalwart partner to the U.S. in defending North America during the Second World War. With its 11.5 million people in 1939 spread over a huge territory, Canada was a good ally that pulled its weight. Despite having been gutted during the Depression years, this dominion within the British Commonwealth of Nations achieved success far beyond any reasonable expectation. The two countries worked closely together to secure vulnerable frontiers, stimulate wartime economies, and protect the realm of North America, a core and essential achievement that was necessary for all other military action to unfold. A fundamental objective of American defense policy, noted one U.S. Army planner, was to fashion an outer frontier to avoid the likelihood of accepting war upon our own territory. Canada had the same strategic goal. In fact, how North America was fortified and shielded is crucial to understanding the ability of the Americans and Canadians to commit to fighting overseas, for without a safe homeland, the full output of the continent's industries could never be exported to its close ally Britain or its ally of convenience, the Soviet Union. Central to the Canadian-American wartime relationship was the friendship between King and Roosevelt, particularly in the period when Canada was at war and the U.S. remained neutral from September 1939 to December 1941. During this interlude, the two countries steadily integrated defense production, solved financial dilemmas, and constructed new ways of working together to move past seemingly intractable problems. King recorded in his diary that he found Roosevelt exceedingly easy to talk with, just as the president confided in him that it was great just to be able to pick up the telephone and talk to each other. The president often called King Mackenzie, even though his closest friends knew him as Rex. In this book, he will be referred to as King. He often preferred Mackenzie King, a nod to his grandfather, William Lyon Mackenzie, who was a leader in the Upper Canada Rebellion of 1837 that sought to declare the colony a republic by force. It's unlikely the president was too much aware of the failed rebellions of 1837 or of the irony of the grandson, King, leading the country to support Britain in a time of great peril, but the future Prime Minister, Lester B. Pearson, who served as Canada's wartime ambassador to the United States, said of Roosevelt that he had a better understanding of the position and importance of Canada than most Americans in official places. The U.S. could have turned the screws on Canada harder and more ruthlessly, as it did on occasion to Britain, using crisis to achieve goals of economic dominance or even the erosion of Canadian sovereignty. It did not. The American president was mindful that it was in the interest of the United States to have a strong friend on its northern border. And so, the two nations came together in the face of a common enemy, surmounting many long-standing national barriers and ingrained prejudices in the collective pursuit of victory. Canada also kept the border with the U.S. demilitarized because its primary goal was to support Britain, which was on the front lines in the fight against the Axis powers, an alliance consisting of Germany, Italy, and Japan since late 1940. Even though the Dominion controlled its foreign policy and pursued its own national interests, the act of standing by Britain guided the country's war effort. Canada had other strategic aims, as will be explored in this book, but none of these matched the need to aid Britain, and none of these strategies could have been achieved without closer integration with the United States. Adding complexity to the issue, Britain's weakness in the face of fascist victories early in the war reduced its ability to guarantee Canadian sovereignty, and the rapid drain on its treasury left Canada desperate for new markets.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?